Portland's favorite morning roast.
I was listening to the boys this morning.
It's time for your Sunrise Guys.
They've got really good meat.
They got great meat.
Dirt and Sprague.
No, dude, get right to the meat.
On the Fan Sports Network.
All right, welcome back in. Hour number three. Dirt and Sprague here, Portland Sports Leader, 105.1 FM, The Fan, 1080 AM. I'd love to try it. Odyssey app, live on YouTube. Good morning, everybody.
Here we go, man. Here we go.
Got a lot to get to in this hour of radio. Have you heard the city and Tom Dundon are at odds over arena funding? God. Are you aware of that story?
I think the reporters locally are doing a good job. They have to be mildly annoyed of just like...
Yeah, I think we're all in the same spot. Like, there's a little bit of that going on in college football right now, too. We'll get to that in a moment, where it's just like, it feels like it's the same. Nothing has changed. It's the same thing. We're going to leave. This isn't good.
We have to talk about it.
Too much at stake to not talk about it. But I almost feel like after today, we can read the latest comments, and then let's have an embargo on it for 24 hours, unless some sort of new information comes out.
Let it build.
Like, we're all leading to a vote coming at some point in August anyway. So we'll give you the latest update. Bill Orem had a piece last night in The Oregonian on what was happening. Talk about leaving. Are the Blazers leaving town? Is the SEC leaving the NCAA? Are they going to take their ball and go home? It became quite the conversation yesterday. Out of SEC Media Days, which began, and I want to play some audio, and then somebody saying, like, there's a legitimate chance this could happen. Here is Greg Sankey, the commish himself of the SEC, was asked, hey, man, you guys got to break off, do your own thing?
They're real. People have talked about that. They've opined about the frustrations that bring them to the point of saying we should look at something significantly different. I do not believe that is a leverage point. I think that's just honest communication. But I also know the pride with which I spoke of 13 national championships, and there is meaning and value. And I do think a national expectation that we participate in a national organization. But that national organization must function in a healthy manner. Otherwise, that simmering will continue.
So just for
simmering,
the simmering continues. Kirby Smart is going today. He just got done up on the stage answering questions.
I haven't seen anything yet from him.
Nothing lengthy, but I did see that somebody asked him, hey, Kirby, what are your thoughts on Sankey's comments on that yesterday? And he said, quote, yep, I've actually been there for a long time. So I know there's people in the SEC that truly believe this. Now, what is the breaking point and what will make them happy? Is this actually a reasonable thing? I don't know. Here is Heather Dinich yesterday when asked on the SEC network about the feasibility of it.
Oh, it's very real. And this is something that has been going on for months because SEC presidents and chancellors have been talking about this since about February when they met in Nashville to talk about options of self-governance if they cannot get federal legislation. I mean, that's where the conversations are. And you can look at the Big 12 and the Texas Tech incident with Brendan Sorsby as an example of what this means. Because when you're talking about breaking away from the NCAA, you're talking about making and enforcing your own rules. In that case, the NCAA wasn't able to enforce its own rules on gambling. So the SEC and Greg Sankey will tell you, we already do make some of our rules and enforce them, but if they can't get help from the federal government, get some antitrust protection so that every time they try to make a rule, the NCAA, they don't get turned around and somebody sues them for it. That's what these conversations are about.
I feel like there's almost two different conversations going on at the same time. One of them is a playoff silo conversation of getting teams in and the criteria and the 9-game conference schedule, and then there's the rules and the finances of it and the ability to file a lawsuit and get the ruling you want from a local judge, and nobody really has any control. And they bleed over, and it might lead to a divorce. But I got some thoughts on this. What are your takeaways from Greg Sankey saying, yeah, we've been having these conversations for months?
I think some of this depends on the Save College Football Sports Act thing that's sitting right now in legislation. Like, they're continuing to tweak it and get to a point where they officially vote on it. I have to believe that if it passes, this is a nothing burger. If it doesn't, you're leaving the ground and leaving it open for the SEC to say, all right, cool, thanks, NCAA, see you later.
Mm-hmm.
And look, that's always been my biggest fear. Since USC and UCLA announced they're going to the Big Ten, you look at the landscape of everything, it's hard not to go to the most extreme because that tends to be what happens. And I said years ago, my biggest fear is the Big Ten and SEC break away and team up and do like a Super League thing. I think that's a terrible idea for the sport. I wish the sport in many ways would lean back into what it is while still acknowledging many people have been brought under the tent an umbrella and made the sport the second most popular sport in America.
Mm-hmm.
But I think a lot of it hinges on that. That's just my two cents. And if it doesn't pass, I think they would absolutely explore avenues even deeper to break away from the NCAA and do their own thing. Because he's not wrong in some capacity of like, we already do our own thing. And the NCAA has been proven to be kind of irrelement now.
They can't do anything. They have no authority at all.
You appeal anything they do, you certainly win.
Yes. You find a judge who roots for your school or is an alumni, he'll rule in your favor. They have no ability.
Sorsby was going
to
play.
Yes.
He had to walk away because of the backlash of it all.
Yes.
So, yeah, man, I think a lot of it hinges on that legislation. And if it passes, then I think we're back in the thick of the NCAA running college football with these leaders. If it doesn't, I think people should be weary of what's going to happen.
Yeah, I don't know. I certainly have poo-pooed the idea, and you floated it out many a times over the years, of them breaking away. I think there's more validity now, and you might end up being right here. The one thing that I don't see happening, and maybe lawsuits don't matter anymore to anybody, the idea of the Big Ten and SEC doing a joint thing is just something that I have a hard time fathoming for a couple of reasons. One, I would think they would get sued to oblivion for creating a monopoly in college football and not allowing other people access.
So we're worried about college football conferences being monopolies, but not Amazon.
Right. I mean, this is what do we care about in this country? We're discussing legislation to save college sports now when there's a million different issues that hit people in the pocketbook and are far more serious than whether or not a quarterback can play a fifth year of college football. Right. But that's where our attention is at. And the other part of it is, like, if you're building a super league, and if I'm anybody at the top end of the Big Ten or the SEC, why am I allowing Mississippi State to be in here? Like, if that's truly where I'm going, why is Northwestern in here?
Because
why
I think
is Purdue in here?
Would fight for all.
See, and
the
this is where I don't
conference.
Think they will. I think if you truly had that breakaway, it
You'd
would be
abandon?
The Big Ten and the SEC would be stripped down of, like, we make money, you don't make money. We're invited, you're not invited. Why do I need Purdue here in my
Super
League?
How many total teams are in both? Was there 18 in the Big Ten?
18 in the Big Ten and 16 in the SEC, if I'm not wrong.
Okay.
Like, if it got to that point, it would be more of like, the riffraff's gone.
I think
Florida
two.
State, Miami, Clemson, Notre Dame. Like, you would call them.
Two.
Texas Tech.
You could probably seemingly cut four if you want to talk about adding certain teams.
Right.
God, I hate having this conversation.
But this is my point, though. I don't think that's going to happen. What I do now think, though, is a legitimate shot of happening is the SEC just playing their own thing. And to the question
good
of...
Good luck with that, dude.
See, and this is the point, though. Like, would it work? Like, yeah, it would. People are still going to watch. And the idea...
This is where we will disagree.
See, and I just... People love SEC. It's a religion down there.
No. They will watch.
I would still watch, too.
I wouldn't really care. It doesn't impact. You'd have what if you're saying they're doing their own thing? So the Big Ten, the Big 12,
the rest of the conferences,
the ACC, and the Group of Six are all off doing their thing.
Conceivably, they would be having they would still be playing normal college football.
Go and I don't need to watch LSU and Ole Miss play twice a season. I don't need to watch Bama Georgia twice a season. That ruins the mystique of those rivalries.
Yeah, you would play an SEC-only schedule, and you would crown a champion at the end of it, and you would just be the SEC.
It's a fake champion.
It is, but to the point that I would make, though, of, like, how would that ever work, that's literally how college football existed forever until 1998.
It has.
We didn't have national championship games. You didn't play the second-best team in the sport or the best team in the sport. You just played the bowl game that your conference was tied into, and then we crowned a title at the end of the season.
But they didn't win it every year.
No,
they didn't.
You have
Washington and Miami and Notre Dame, and you have other schools that have been voted as national champions in years past. So,
and we would just be left debating the same thing we were debating back then of who was better in 1997, Nebraska or Michigan.
I can't fathom anything worse for the sport. And I say that thinking the Big Ten and SEC breaking away and doing a league is
It'd
bad.
It'd be disastrous for sure. I get it.
It's idiotic.
Yes, I totally agree with you there. I disagree with the notion of it. I just think people love football so much down there. And I love football so much that I don't know if I would care the same amount that I did, but I'm not going to sit here and pretend I would watch an LSU-Alabama game in primetime on ABC.
But if the conferences that aren't a part of something like that were smart about scheduling, they would get you to not care. Because what they do is they would go, oh, what's your 9 a.m. SEC-only game? Okay, Ohio State.
But how many Big Ten teams can Ohio State play?
It doesn't matter.
This
it's Ohio State, and you're going to play Ohio State. You ain't playing South Carolina. You're Ole Miss.
Sure, if I give you the option to watch Ohio State-Purdue at 9 a.m. or Texas-Oklahoma at 9 a.m., what are you watching?
Look, easier
one game's 49
done.
To nothing at halftime.
I might fundamentally choose to just seriously,
and that's totally fine.
It.
And I don't
choose other games.
I'm not saying that you're lying about your opinion. I think that's very valid.
I haven't been tested yet.
No,
but that's the opinion today.
My point being, and this would like kind of lead into the next part of the conversation, because there's this whole playoff component of this that they're very upset about right now. Oh. So Sakey was asked yesterday. They have gone to 9 conference games in the SEC, and they've added a 10th Power Four games.
They were strong-armed into 9, by the
way. Sure, and a lot of coaches didn't want to do it.
Yes.
A lot of coaches were still adamant. Lane Kiffin was one of them, like, this is the dumbest thing we've ever done. And a lot of coaches are now realizing that, because they felt, and Sankey argued for a long time, that they would get either an expanded playoff with that move, or you would get a recalibration of the way we rank teams in college football. Because as we've said for years, and it is true, like, 11-1 in the MAC is not 11-1 in the SEC. You have an 11-1 next to your team name. That does not mean you're as good as Georgia or like whoever the representative is from the SEC this year, right? So it's a very hard sport to judge, and records can't be the only thing. There's a lot of nuance that goes into it. And what has not happened? The playoff is not expanded. We're still stuck at 12. And they have the college football playoff committee came out, and Sankey commented, said it was very disappointing. They have said they're not going to change their metric for ranking teams. That at the end of the day, win loss will matter the most.
Metric.
No, they make it up as they go. But they wanted more. They were under the assumption from the leaders in their conference that there would be a weighted metric of strength of schedule. Because when you look at strength of schedule, who has the best at the end of the year every year?
It's SEC
teams, right?
Yeah.
Just for a note on this, and then I'm curious your thoughts.
But it's
on
because
it.
Of the reputation. We've always maintained that opinion. I think you go into the year, and I'm just
so. Do you think the SP Plus is because of reputation? Because there's metrics that rank strength of schedule that are mathematical equations that are put together.
But the SP Plus isn't just like your win-loss. It's like it's
a lot of stuff.
Metrics compiled together. I like the SP Plus. I like advanced analytics and how we regard some of this stuff. But also, I've been around the sport and watched the sport enough to know a lot of this is just spoken reputation. I'm just as guilty as you or anybody else out there when you see Georgia. Right? Kirby has two of those things.
Mm-hmm.
When you see Georgia on the schedule against non-SEC team, where do you want to lean and who you pick? Because why?
Right.
History.
The coach at
championships.
Yeah.
Coach. Recruiting ranking.
Mm-hmm.
What we're finding out is that that's not always the case.
Not
right?
100%
so
of the time.
You get a lot of these people that go into the assumption like, oh, the SEC is dominant. The SEC is the team I'm going to pick in this contest between the ACC or the Big 12. And like, they're a lot of the times against other conferences, they're not necessarily wrong. But we're finding out in this era of college football,
it's not 100% accurate.
The idea of these teams is not exactly who they are.
Totally fair.
And it's still hard for me as a fan going into them to not pick them. I think last
year,
Ohio State, Texas, I picked Texas. And then I watched Texas play, and I'm like,
I mean, they almost won the game, but yeah.
They did, but Ohio State made Arch look terrible, and they had no offense to speak of. And I'm like, well, I went in thinking it was Texas this. Every time, seemingly, there's a Georgia game in a Sugar Bowl, I'm like, well, Georgia's going to win. Their fans are there, and it's Georgia. And then what are they not winning? They're not winning in the Sugar Bowl in the playoffs. So, like, the idea of the SEC also just sounds and feels better, I think, to a lot of people.
Totally fair point.
And some of the analytics, in my opinion, don't necessarily back always who the best teams are.
This is the real difficult part of this conversation, because I don't disagree with anything you said. But I also have the opinion, and I think numbers, not 100% accurate, but mostly valid, will back up that from top to bottom, it is the best conference in the sport. Now, the difference in the SEC now...
I don't disagree with that point.
And the difference in the SEC now is that they just have been watered down from the top.
Yeah.
And so you don't have these overwhelming Bama or Georgia teams that nobody can contend with, and that's why they haven't won a national championship. Just to use the SP Plus model to highlight this point, and this is why it's a really tricky conversation, and I understand some of what their coaches are saying. Last year, Arkansas was the lowest-rated SP Plus team in the SEC in their conference at the end of the year. Arkansas was dead last in the SEC. Do you know how many Big Ten teams they ranked higher than?
Okay, so this is a fair thing to throw out. I'm going to say 10.
7. Close.
Okay.
Arkansas was the last place SEC team. I don't think they won an SEC game. I would be shocked if they did. They were terrible. They fired Man Boobs himself, right? They moved on to a new coach. They ranked higher than the bottom 7 teams in the Big Ten.
Yeah.
Purdue, Rutgers, Maryland, UCLA was probably in there. I have to go back and look at my other Big Ten rankings. Michigan State was terrible with Jonathan Smith. And that's, again, it's not the end. To your point, that doesn't guarantee that if Arkansas plays Michigan State on a neutral field, they're going to win the
and
game.
And that's all my point is. Like, but I don't know for certain that they beat seven teams.
Right. There's just a balance here of, and part of it, I want to have sympathy for them, and part of them, I don't want to have sympathy for them. Because on the one hand, the SEC has created part of this problem by adding Oklahoma and Texas to good programs, to good recruiters, to teams who have been to playoff. You've made your schedule more challenging. You've done this to yourself. On the other hand, I do want to tip my cap to them and say, you know what? Thanks for finally playing nine conference games. And, oh, by the way, thank you for adding a tenth Power Four game, because we should have that. The Big Ten should be mocked and ridiculed until they add that. And most competent teams schedule somebody. Oregon's playing Oklahoma State. It's not a world beater, but guess what? It's a Power Four opponent.
Could be a good team this year.
You should not be able to play Portland State, Sacramento State, and Baylor School for the Blind in non-conference. That should be illegal, and I applaud the SEC for doing that. But it leads to a very wonky debate every year of
who is
you're going to play a tougher schedule. You're not going to maybe play an Ohio State or an Indiana type from the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. But the meat grinder of your schedule will be more difficult because there's not a Maryland or a Rutgers in there. But you're going to go 9-3, and that will keep you from the playoff. And the Big Ten team who had the easier schedule is going to go 10-2 and get the playoff.
See, like, the problem is
there's a tough balance here that I see both sides of the argument.
We would have to really dive into the total numbers because I don't know it off the top of my head. But like, how many SEC teams? The problem is the SEC becomes the debate of, is this 9-3 team, should they get over the 10-2 team?
That is the debate we'll have every year in this playoff format.
But I hate it. You know who was left out of the playoff last year?
BYU. One of them.
I what mean, was the
Notre Dame was too.
What was the record?
10-2.
10-2?
No, 11-2, right?
11-2? They played 13 games?
I think they were 11-1 and then lost the conference title game, right? Weren't they 11-1
in the
regular season?
Yeah, in the regular season. Thank you. 11-1. Their only loss was to Texas Tech.
But they were punished for losing their conference title.
They were punished
title game.
For that.
And Alabama got smoked
because
for their
it
third
wasn't
loss
close,
of the year.
By the way. And Alabama, yes, absolutely got smoked.
They were 11-1 in the regular season and lost the Big 12 title.
Was there this national uproar about it? I mean, your Mark probably said some stuff, but it didn't catch on the way Sankey would threaten the entire sport.
Like, no.
That's the part of it. I don't disagree with playing a conference, a power opponent paired with your nine conference games. I'm glad they finally decided to do that. It's great. More conferences should do that. I watch teams lose out on the playoff at 9-3. Texas was a real argument for people last year. I'm like,
it was at the end
of the
year.
I watched them lose to Florida. Florida was terrible.
They fired their coach.
But BYU loses their biggest game of the year. Now, they got blown out in that game. It was never really close, but they had a freshman quarterback.
Right.
Did we argue a lot? No, we moved on because their profile doesn't fit narratives. And that's the thing the SEC gets to lay back on is the narrative-based opinions about most of the teams in their program. I agree they're top to bottom. They're better than every conference. I've made fun of the Big Ten. But us saying the Big Ten gets more teams in because of their non-conference, I also find that incredibly misleading. Like, if Indiana plays... I'm trying to think. Fill in the Big 12 team.
Well, to use Missouri's example, they're playing a Power Four. It's Kansas. If Indiana played Kansas, they're probably winning that game by 30 points.
Yeah. But I'm also not boosting their profile because beat a Kansas or
it's
a Colorado.
Kansas,
like, that doesn't change a whole lot. Is it better than beating Sacramento State? Certainly.
Yeah.
But are we also going to act like the SEC doesn't get as many teams in the playoff record-wise based on what the Big Ten does?
Yeah.
The Big Ten is not a great conference top to bottom.
No, it is not. It's very top-heavy.
It's Ohio State, it's Oregon, it's Indiana, and then it's debatable. Is it Michigan? Is it USC? Is it whoever, right? Like, it's three or four teams at most deep. The rest of the conference does not get a lot of the same accolades and respect that the SEC does. But because the SEC misses their 9-3 team on the playoff, we have to debate... Well, is their schedule harder? Should they have earned it more with their 9 wins in 12 versus this team's 11 wins in 12?
It's right.
It becomes utterly ridiculous to me.
It is a fascinating conversation, and it's leading to quite the argument in the sport. And look, this is nothing new. It happens at the end of every year. What should matter? What team should be ranked where? You mentioned a team there that I want to get to in the next segment because we've seen other teams in the SEC start to do something that some – we're worried that they would do, and there was a news came out yesterday, so I'll get to that in the next segment. Also, some of the numbers behind, to kind of back up your argument, what the SEC has done in the playoff over the last handful of years. A little more college football talk next on The Fam. All right, we need to ask a question.
Why does Auburn bring a kicker to Media Day?
Dude.
Same.
How uninspired do you get with the optimism of your football team if they send a kicker to media day? Are you hitting the panic button?
Well, Golish barely had a tan. I don't even think he has a tan.
I mean,
not good.
The kicker has a better tan than Golish.
He's got. I mean, he's a kicker, dude. They practice for 7 minutes a day.
And then he's been playing 36 holes a day this summer.
It's the easiest life on the planet. It's hard. Pressure kicks. Yeah, you stand around all day.
I thought Swag was going to get on the mic and be like, he's actually the golden mule last year in college football, guys. Like, what?
Is there a Golden Mule Award?
They should call it that.
They should. Why don't they?
It's the Lou Groza Award outstanding kicker.
What did Lou Groza do?
As P1 of the station, Alexis Cernan won back in the day. Is he the only Lou Groza Award winner in state history?
Well, it certainly isn't the team in Eugene.
No, our kickers blow.
Well, the best kicker in your program's history is our kicker.
Bilotti's kid got a DUI once. Remember when his kid was a kicker?
Win at Iowa? Automatica.
No, I just...
Automaticus.
I love thinking the history of Oregon kickers, and we once had Mike Bilotti's son who was taking up a scholarship spot, and I'm pretty sure, Duck fan, correct me if I'm wrong, I think they only had him as like an onside kick specialist. He would literally just do onside kicks, and that was it.
That is such a
And then I'm pretty
Nepo
sure
move.
At his time at Oregon, he got popped for a Dewey,
now, the
too,
war
and did not
only
lose
began,
his scholarship.
It only began in 1992.
Okay, we haven't had many years.
Alexis Cerna is a Golden Mule winner, okay? Yes. In my book, he's a Golden
there
Mule.
There is only one two-time winner of the Lou Groza Award.
Is it the cat from Florida State? That was a third-round pick?
Aguayo?
It is from Florida State, but you can go back a little bit.
Janikowski.
Yes.
Janikowski.
Seabass. 76-yard field goal attempt.
Yes. You got that in your leg, don't you, Seabass? Huh? You got that in your leg. We were debating and yelling about college football. I want to read a couple quick thoughts here at the fan text line. 503-864-6326.
Yelling.
No, that was a very philosophical debate. By the way, mail sack's still coming up at the top of the hour, so get your questions in, and at some point we will do the Blazer panic thing again.
We don't need to linger on it. I just want to make one more point. Like,
yes.
I get what you're saying. There is, I'm telling you, when the CBS theme used to hit, and you would go live to Vern Lundquist and Gary Johnson.
Gary Johnson.
What?
Was it Gary? I don't think it's Gary Johnson, is it?
What's his name?
I should know. I have his jersey.
Gary
Danielson.
Player. Gary Danielson. Thank you.
Gary Johnson was the random, he was the governor somewhere, ran for president.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Where was Gary Johnson the governor?
Yeah, whatever. When that theme
New Mexico. He showed up like, why is the governor of New Mexico running for president?
And they would be live at an SEC venue. Yeah. I'm not acting like, as a college football fan, I didn't get super stoked. But if they broke off, I'd like, why do I need to care about this?
Yeah.
My time on weekends with my family is already stretched thin enough.
I mean, I get that point. Yeah.
I'd just be like,
I just love football so much that I would still watch. But I agree. It would suck watching it being like, this is so dumb. I would be angry the entire time.
None of this
watched
impacts
it. Like,
your team, no, your fandom, none no, of it.
I just love football. I, dude, if you gave me a Panthers-Cardinals Hall of Fame game, I'd watch the entire thing right now.
We say that. We watch the first 3 minutes, and then we leave it on in the background and don't pay attention.
Wanted to read a couple of quick thoughts here because I think one of them, and you mentioned Texas, and I want to get to them too because I do find them interesting. Somebody said the funniest thing would be the SEC trying to call their conference championship a national championship, to which I would point out, one, yes, they would do that. You know they would do it. And two, this is my whole point about college football pre-1998. This is my entire argument.
Well,
you
but
didn't
no, nobody's win. Arguing against that point.
I know, but the point was that we didn't have a national champion. You didn't ever play the 1-2. Rarely at the end of the year did they meet in a bowl game, unless the bowl ties happened to coincide. And we were left debating at the end of the year who was the better team.
Mm-hmm.
That was how college football existed forever. You didn't play the game, and you get done with the year, and you say, our team was better than your team. That's the way we lived. That's the world we lived in. Why'd your eyebrows grow up? Did something happen?
Just breaking ESPN. We're just getting layoff news.
What do we got? Who got fired?
Well, I don't think we're going to be able to settle anything on a public platform debate-wise. You remember the age-old Charles Davis and Daniel Jeremiah rage debate about when Mendoza will play?
Ooh.
Charles Davis laid off.
Yeah.
Bart Scott, see you later.
Bart Scott?
Bart Scott is gone.
What are we going to do without Bart Scott?
I don't know.
I didn't know he still worked at ESPN.
Can't wait. I think he was doing a radio show,
wasn't he? Was he? I'll take your word for it.
By the way, poll question is up. Do you feel less hopeful about your college football program if they bring a kicker to media day?
You absolutely do. If you vote no on that, you got what's the matter with you? You're a kicker.
We are nailing our poll questions.
I think this is the best day of poll questions we've ever had. Go vote at Dirt and Sprague. We'll do the read at the end of the show. But I did want to get to, so Drinkwitz points out yesterday, and this is one of the biggest sticking points, to highlight the impossible nature of ranking teams in college athletics, right? So Drinkwitz has this quote saying the Big Ten's won 3 straight national championships because they played nobody in non-conference, no Power 4 teams, right? Mm-hmm. And it's ludicrous. It's laughable. That's not the reason that they've won national championships. The other side of that argument is you bring up Texas, and I think they are a great example. When you look at Texas in the last month of the last season, last year, Arch Manning had some of the best numbers in all of college football from a quarterback standpoint. Mm-hmm. Their offense found their footing. They were a really young team to the point that Bill Connelly was almost surprised that they brought in transfers because they kind of spent the year developing those guys. And we talked to him the other day and he said, I was shocked that they brought new players in. The problem in this debate is that if they followed Eli Drinkwitz's model, guess where Texas is at the end of the year? They're in the college football playoff. And that's the point that makes this incredibly difficult. Did you see what LSU did yesterday? So LSU, in this entire debate, you got to play 9 conference games and a 10 Power 4 game. LSU had a home-and-home schedule with Arizona State in 29-30. You know what they did yesterday?
Canceled it. Yeah.
It's off the list. We're not going to play it anymore.
It'd be a fun little game. Dillingham at LSU if he was still there.
He was rumored for the job.
What if he was coach of LSU by the time the game happened?
Very well could be. 29-30, still a couple of more years away. There was another one I can't remember off the top of my head, and this is the part of it that really frustrates me and why it's, again, difficult. I'm glad that Texas wanted to play Ohio State. I'm glad that Texas plays Ohio State again this year. But there's also a very difficult nature in balancing how do we judge that game? Because there's a lot of teams in college football who are going to play nobodies. Like, I think Oregon has a somewhat interesting first two games this year. Playing Boise State and Oklahoma State is nowhere near the same as playing in Ohio State or Texas in non-conference. And if they come out of their non-conference 3-0, mm-hmm. and the Texas or Ohio State team, one of them is going to have a loss in non-conference, Oregon's going to be ranked higher than the team with the loss. And that's a very weird thing to rate and rank of. You haven't played the same. This isn't the NFL where you're playing NFL teams every week. There are haves and have-nots. There are good teams and there are bad teams. And I just, it's one of the biggest reasons why, and you've made the argument for the expanded playoff, why I want an expanded playoff of just, this thing is impossible to judge. We have metrics that show us good teams versus bad teams, but to your point, it's not always accurate.
We have preconceived notions.
There's biases that are built in. Like, how do we not just get to a point where we expand access, we have play-in games for the playoff instead of conference champ? Like, that would solve so much of this trouble, but it just is such a difficult thing. And when I hear Eli Drinkwitz, I roll my eyes on one hand. On the other hand, I say if Texas played Indiana's non-conference schedule last year, guess where they are at the end of the year? Mm-hmm. They're in the playoff. And nobody bats an eye that they lost to Florida. Miami lost to Louisville at home. That was one of their losses. And guess what? They were still in the playoff because they went undefeated in non-conference.
I just find most of the opinions are already based in what you already thought going into everything. So if you think the SEC is the dominant conference of 2026, I venture to guess, even amidst losses with some of these programs, you're going to still say, guess what? This team's blank in one record is better than that team's undefeated record.
This team's 8-1, but this team's got two losses, but they're better than them because they. It's just,
I know,
and it's going to be we're going to chase our tail as a dog arguing this in circles for months to come.
Well, it does
because it's not
like
going
that.
Anywhere, right?
It feels like you and I. I think because they brought it back up, it does feel like we've done two or three different versions of this conversation of how you gauge conferences, how do you gauge which conference should get the leeway.
Right.
Non-conference opponents, like all of that stuff. And that's the frustrating part about the sport. It's why I personally love college football. It's why I lean the NFL a little bit more.
Yeah, I get it.
I don't have to worry about and freak out that my team lost a game every week.
It's not a panic mode.
I'm not going to, you know, the NFC South is not going to be punished because the NFC West is better.
Right.
You know, even if you don't like the NFC South getting Carolina in because they lost and the Falcons won, well, that doesn't matter because they won their conference even by default.
Those are the rules.
And the NFC West, unfortunately, all those teams except the Cardinals have the rest together. So,
right.
Sorry, they got to figure that out while that conference gets to just crap all over themselves and get to the playoff. You still get to work it out and play a playoff game.
This is a funny stat to kind of back some of this up, and we'll go on to not greener pastures, unfortunately. More bad news coming up in the next segment, but I did see this yesterday. Against Power Four leagues in the full portal NIL era, the SEC has played nine college football playoff games.
Okay.
Do you know what the record is in those nine?
I don't.
3-6?
2-7.
Oh, but I was told they're dominant forces who could not be stopped, and they're easily the best conference in the sport.
Now, SEC teams have wins over at, like, Ole Miss beat Georgia, but this is against other Power Four teams. Sure. That makes sense. The wins are Texas over Clemson.
Well, we think a lot about Clemson, don't we? That was the 9-3 team, wasn't it?
2 years ago, yeah. They beat them at home.
Okay.
And then Texas over Arizona State.
Oh, man, because we all thought so much of that ASU team in that Big 12 conference that season.
Those are their two wins. They're 2-7 in the full
why does that
portal NIL era
not resonate with people? I'm not saying they won't have a title this year or not beat a good team. It's just we have a little bit of a sample size a couple years into this thing.
Right.
And the portal in the NIL world has completely flattened the landscape of the sport for who the top teams really are and how teams can compete. And we need to stop with this preconceived notion, well, the SEC's just dominant. They're the best one. Maybe top to bottom they are. Maybe their bottom would destroy other people's bottoms.
bottom.
I said it, regretted it.
Is that a bottom via bottom?
Yeah, like if your bottom's going to just dominate the other bottoms.
Who's got the best bottom on this show?
It's got to be you.
It's got to be me.
If it's not, that's an upset.
I'm caked up over
here. I think it's you, Swag second.
Swag's got skinny butt. You got runner butt.
I have runner butt?
I mean, you got a little more tush in your push, a little bit more, but I think I got more than
it
you.
It depends if he's fat swagger.
Yeah.
Regular skinny running swag.
He did just come
swag.
Back from a 3-week trip in Italy, so I think we added a layer there, if you will.
Yeah, but
a little more cushion.
2-7 is... That's a joke.
There's a layer of wine and pasta.
Well, the wine and pasta layer currently on there that was added
up
on
top. If the ACC was 2-7 in their nine expanded playoff games.
You're bottom, just derailed everything.
So far a masterpiece, if I do say so myself.
I can't stop thinking about bottoms now.
I said it. It's like, damn it. The bottom's dominating the bottoms.
All right, we'll move on from college football. That's enough.
That's
for
a power bottom.
Who's the power bottom? The SEC thinks they're the power bottom.
They're a power bottom.
We have...
God bless the beaver.
The mail sack coming up top of the hour. So get your questions in. The Sparta TRT mail sack. It is loaded. I do not think we will have enough room, but we will try. 503-864-6326. I got leftovers from last week's sack I got to start with, and then we'll dive into this week's sack. Right. That is coming up at the top of the hour. Are you aware that Tom Dunnan and the city don't like each other? The latest next on The Fan. It is a Mail Sack Tuesday. A Sparta TRT Mail Sack Tuesday.
Let's go.
Coming up top of the hour. Few minutes away. Greener pastures are ahead, people. Because in the meantime... here we go again. The latest the world turns. Are you ready for this one?
I'm going to tell you this right now. Unless something jarring comes out today,
this is it for a day.
I'm calling a timeout maybe for the rest of the week. I can't.
We're doing a hard lid 24-hour embargo unless there's a new piece or new source of information. That's it. Nothing tomorrow on the show about this.
This was in no way meant because these people are actually doing their job and doing it well.
Yes.
It is clearly now everybody going, hey, so-and-so, this is what I think of them. I'm anonymous. And they need to be passing that information along, but I can't. Yes. I Bill Orme knocked it out. Jason Quick's knocking it out.
Yep.
Yeah, I got to take a break. After this, I'm taking a break.
My mental health needs it. Yeah. The NBA team in the city, stop me if you've heard this before, very far apart.
Hate each other.
On their negotiations.
There's no love.
One official told Bill Orme, as an anonymous source, given the ability to speak freely over this, as Dundon and his at least four of his co-owners were scheduled to meet yesterday afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
And one official told Bill Orme there is a very real potential outcome of that meeting that the ownership group would reset the negotiations and essentially start over, tossing aside the $365 million that the state has already committed. When asked about the city's business climate and rising construction costs, the official added the deal doesn't get better. It gets worse over time.
Well, duh.
No esh.
I can't remember who it was because I read the piece. And then Quick had some stuff, and then I saw, God, who was it? I saw a TV cut of one of the stations locally, and I'm blanking right now, so I apologize. But they were interviewing one of the representatives, the council members, and I think it was the one that said this quote, that the deal only gets worse.
Right.
I did find myself agreeing with him on this. It's funny that they sent out the term sheet without the vote from the other council members. I liked it. I also found myself agreeing with the council members, like, yeah, I'm a lawyer. Usually when we give you the offer, it's the highest starting offer and you bargain down. And
right.
I didn't think this was a good offer. And they've already said no. So it's only going to get worse. And I said, well, yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, one team official argued that the city of Portland doesn't even recognize that they got a sweetheart deal out of this, adding, why is the city sending this thing knowing we're not going to agree to it? Basically saying they're suggesting that the arena renovation is far less expensive for the public had ownership pressed for a new facility. And we've talked about that. That's one of their arguments. They added the team official did, quote, they're making it complicated. And if they want to say no, if they don't want us, then that's fine. Hmm. The head of the city council, the president, Jamie Dunphy, came out and said the terms represent a market rate renovation deal that includes strong community benefits and common sense worker protections. The first draft term sheet we shared was developed in good faith, but was completed without information we had been seeking from the Blazers. And so there's not a lot of new information in here. It's just different officials from different sides talking about some of the same things in terms of, and Quick, by the way, had another one last night that was really good as well on this. If you want to read through the entire thing, insinuating that a lot of the city has not, so we mentioned that Clean Energy Fund group that is, they're hopeful on the city side will approve the funding. And I think that there's actually a really strong argument they could get a lot of the money from the city side through that. But as we highlighted last week, they have a independent board that is appointed by the city council that approves or disapproves the funding. And essentially you say, here is our clean energy plan. They have raked in, there's only a 1% tax on something, some corporate thing. And they estimated it was going to bring in a couple of million dollars. Like, they didn't think it was going to be that big. And the pool of money has grown into like $100 million a year. It's been significantly more than they thought. Mm-hmm. And so that's the hope, that they can use that. But what do they need to approve it? They need to see your plans and how you're going to use it for clean energy. Is there something you could do for the soul, you know, the lighting in the arena, the air conditioning in the arena, the generators that you're using? Like, there's a million different roads you can go down. Anybody who knows
Climate
anything about
Pledge is doing
right,
that, yeah.
Exactly.
Right.
And so if you just show them the plans of saying, hey, here's how we're going to make the building more energy efficient, the city can very easily turn around and say, here's $100 million from the Clean Energy Fund. Use that. And that foots most of the bill. And then there's not really a big argument anymore. But the city's not playing ball there. They are so far apart right now, and there is so much animosity between the two sides. They can't even come to an agreement on who's in charge of hiring the architect for the redesign of the Moda Center.
Well, that was always, I actually thought that was always going to be an issue for them.
The team wants the city to pay for it. The city doesn't want to pay for anything. They're haggling over every little detail and all this. So
they're going to want a union-based
right.
architecture.
And they're saying that's a complete non-starter on the team side.
Dundon doesn't probably believe in that stuff.
There's not an on loose stuff here. I just wanted to pass along. If you wanted to read it, a new Orem and Quick piece last night.
One thing that some people have, you know, I still sit at DEFCON 4 of losing the team. One important note out of this Orem piece is that these council members, the leading one, I'm blanking
Dunphy.
The name, Dunphy.
Jamie Dunphy.
Phil Dunphy out here. He's saying that basically they got the votes. Now, the terms, nowhere close, need to agree upon it. He's making me feel like once they get to a term sheet, they're going to vote yes. I also felt very encouraged about Chip Alexander yesterday on our program. Highly advise you check out the podcast. He's worked in Raleigh for years. And we brought him on to talk through the beginning of the Dundon era with the Hurricanes. And it was a lot of, he's going to relocate the team and he's going to do this. Well, the arena in Carolina, the Lenovo Center, is run by, what was it?
Trust or some committee. I can't remember.
Basically,
well, they created a stadium district, and there's some council that oversees the district.
It's basically their city council runs specifically the arena. And the difference in how they approached everything couldn't have been more stark than what we've done. He got here, no billionaires!
Right.
No!
We started politicking against him before it even began.
He got there, hadn't said anything, and they were like, let's get this done. We need to renovate anyway. We've had the arena since 1999.
We own the arena. We need to put money into it.
So, like, it just was a different approach, and it's not shocking that our city decided to take the approach. The one thing people have used as the fear base against moving the team is he's broke. He doesn't have the money. This quote at the very end of Orem's story, from a team official, it's not like we lose money moving the team. We might spend money, but we don't lose money. It might be okay to spend $1 billion on a relocation fee if the valuation of the team doubles. And that's an important part, because they're starting to kind of dabble in the
That's their next public thing. Negotiation of, like, don't play with us.
Yeah.
And I mean, we knew it was going to get there. Yes.
Don't play with us. We don't care. We will spend money. The problem for that group, they need the votes from the other owners to approve a relocation.
Yes, they do.
You have the expansion waiting right now, and I think they're waiting on this situation to dial it up. But Seattle, to me, is not viable. Vegas has emerged with a potential expansion owner, so that's not
there
viable.
There was another group that came out yesterday, by the way, Walmart Heiress, who's worth $20 billion.
Yeah, that's the Vegas one.
There was a, but yeah, I think it was a new – there's two now, I think, in Vegas, but maybe I'm wrong.
Nashville is not a candidate. That's too close to Memphis, and if Nashville gets a team, it will be Memphis.
Yep.
I just – there's a lot of roadblocks from them moving. The money part I can't speak to. I don't feel that it's there. This is a dude that doesn't play around.
No. How did the head coach negotiation go?
Right. It went his way.
It drug on forever.
It went his way.
We all asked, are we going to do anything here? Are we going to hire a coach? Are you involved? Are we going to get a college coach? And what did he end up getting? He ended up getting the coach that he wanted.
One of the top assistants in the market. Yeah.
One of one contract in the NBA.
Yeah.
That's not a huge financial commitment. He held out until he won.
Yeah.
And it's a game of chicken, and he's going to do the same thing with the stadium deal. It just, yeah, as the world turns,
I get
another
Swag, it's like a guy sitting across, like we're sitting across from each other right now, and I'm Dundon and you're the city. It's no different than you throwing something at me, and I just stare at you. And I don't respond.
You don't answer in any way.
And then you lower what you just said, and I continue to not respond.
Okay, fine.
And now you're so uncomfortable by me just staring at you.
$10.
$9.99. You tell us what you need.
How about I pay you?
Yeah, right.
How about I give you the money?
That's what he's doing. And he's speaking through team officials anonymously. Like, right. This is how he operates.
Yeah.
The city needs to stop with some of this commentary. The Portland may not need this, or whatever the phrase is. Like, get out of here. What are you talking about?
Stupid people on both sides are leading to quite the stalemate, and let's all pray and hope it's over sooner.
They need to
than
show
later.
Us their market stuff, by the way, on the team side to give some city a break. They need
yes.
to.
So,
they keep citing this market value. Can you give us the evidence to right. some of this stuff?
Let's just sit down in a room and get it done, you jackasses. That's the 24-hour embargo starts now. Actually, 25-hour because we got one more hour to go on the show.
Yeah,
25-hour embargo. Now, no Blazer Motor Center conversation. Unless we strike a deal tonight, that'd be kind of fun. It is a loaded final hour, and it starts with the Sparta TRT mail sack. Get your questions in 503-864-6326. Get to as many of them as we can. Starting the final hour next on The Fan.